Hey everybody, Jan Rutherford here with Self-Reliant Leadership. Hey, thanks for joining us. We've got a great episode here today, and I've got a special guest by the name of Dean Correll. Dean, welcome to the show, if you will.
Jan, thank you so much for inviting me. It's great to be with you today.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the skill everybody, you know, that AI will not make obsolete. That's what we're going to talk about, which is, let's just get to the punchline. That skill is?
It's selling and it's sales.
Right. And we're going to cover some misconceptions with that. But before we do, I just want to let everybody know who you are, for those of you that don't. Dean is a career development coach, sales trainer, the instructor of 14 courses. And those 14 courses on LinkedIn Learning have had over 1 million views, which is a lot. He's been in senior leadership positions for more than 3 decades with major publishing companies, including Wiley, where he was VP of sales. And he is the author of Mastering the Basics, Simple Lessons for Achieving Success in Business, which is what we're going to really harp on today. So in the context of what we talked about, you and I met and we talked about sales. And I remember saying, you know, geez, a lot of the veterans that I helped transition from the military to the business world have all these misperceptions of sales. They're focused on their resume. They're focused on LinkedIn profile. And I'm like, I think you should just take a basic sales 101 course, because everything in business is about interpersonal skills and influencing people and selling ideas, whether you're selling, you know, out commodities out, you know, externally or not. What say you?
Well, it's so true. You know, oftentimes we get intimidated by the word sales, or we get nervous by the word sales, or as you said, there's misconceptions or perceptions that we all have of what a salesman is. And sometimes that comes from movies that we watch, you know, through the years, whether it's The Wolf of Wall Street or Alec Baldwin, you know, the line always be closing, in other movies, Tin Men. And we think that salespeople are always like that. And that's the farthest thing from the truth. You know, there are manipulative approaches that are out there, but the vast majority of salespeople that I work with, and the way I've always sold through the years, is just by being myself. And I think that's an important skill set for all of us to learn, no matter what profession we're in.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, real quick, I just put something in the comments. Hey, you know, let us know where you're calling in from. And it looks like all over the world. So welcome. And again, we welcome your questions, and we'll post those up and get to as many as we can. Dean, there's 2 books up there that a lot of billionaires and super successful people have said their success is attributed to. And it's not one of mine or your books. Okay. One is written in 1936, Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. You know, and then the other one is Bob Cialdini's book on influence. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have said, boy, if you understand that, then you understand people. If you understand people, you understand business.
Yes.
And, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, what we know is if you're not generating revenue, you don't have a business. I mean, you can be innovative, have all these great ideas, but if you don't have somebody at the end of the day writing a check for something, you have no fuel to keep the business going.
That's so true. At the end of the day, it is revenue. It's the bottom line. We can have all the KPIs you want and all of the tracking, but it's what's your sales target, what's your number, and am I paying the bills, and am I making any money?
Right.
It's interesting. I have that, you know, I have the influence people, Dale Carnegie's book also on my shelf. You know, the book that influenced me, that changed my life in the early stages of my career, is one that might surprise you. And it's Mark McCormick's What They Don't Teach You at the Harvard Business School.
I remember that.
And it was a bestseller in the 80s, and it sold millions of copies. And it took all the complex thinking and all, you know, sometimes we're intimidated with people with lofty titles or fancy degrees. And what Mark McCormick did was said, just be yourself.
Yeah.
And I think it's a lesson that I've tried to follow throughout my career. And as I train and work with people and talk about sales, I follow that message of just be yourself. When you try to fake it, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's Bill George wrote the book on authentic leadership. Yes. And basically, you know, had the same thing to say, you know, that, you know, you need to be yourself. Again, in the business world, you know, I, as an executive coach, I work with a lot of senior executives and CEOs, and And what I see is, you know, the issues that come up in our discussions are really in three buckets. One is time, you know, gosh, am I spending my time in the right place? And, you know, do I have priorities? You know, I don't have enough time. The other one is, you know, I'd like to do more with strategy, which means literally being out in the market, hearing what's going on, what should I do? But the one that seems to suck up the most time is, you know, people.
Yeah.
Difficult people, challenging customers, trying to manage up, trying to manage sideways. You know, in other words, they can't get their job done because of friction between them and other people.
Right.
And what I think people, and I'm interested in your thought, is I think they think the only agenda that matters is my agenda. You know, I've got my agenda, whether it's internal or external or whatever. And they forget that, boy, I have to be mindful of the other person's agenda.
Yeah.
And what I really need to do is see, you know, do they connect?
Right.
You know, can my priority be somebody else's priority and vice versa? What do you think?
Well, what's interesting is I talk a lot about that now, because in the early stages of my career, I felt everybody was in silos. You know, I had my work. This is what I focused on. This was my target, or this is what I had accomplished. I didn't worry about the marketing department. I didn't worry about IT. I didn't worry about finance. I was just focused on my world. I worked in big companies, but it was very channeled and siloed. In this day and age, if you're not working in collaboration with other departments as a team and solving the needs of the customers or clients that you're working with, you're not going to be successful. Our customers, our clients don't have the patience to deal with the inner workings of our companies if we're not, you know, collaborating well or working well together. So I think that's been a major transition, certainly I've seen in the past decade, of that collaboration and working together with other departments.
Yeah, I think it'd be helpful from a self-awareness perspective to look in the mirror and say, am I easy to work with? Am I making other people's job easier or harder?
Yes.
So
that's my list of things that I talk about for salespeople, and in fact for all of us in business, is the importance of emotional intelligence. It is being aware. It is understanding what the other person is going through, our client, our customer, and ourselves. And I think I wish early on I had studied or even known about emotional intelligence. Dr. Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence, which was the Bible of this 25 years ago when that came out. And I have learned so much just by following those practices. And it is such a critical skill set of emotional intelligence, being aware and listening.
I always say, you know, awareness, it comes in three components. One is like, hey, I know I'm impatient. But the second part is, do I know what my impatience, what effect that has on other people?
Right.
And third, do I have the ability to regulate an emotional response that's best for the other people, not what satisfies my own pride and ego?
Yeah.
So, you've got a list of top 20 qualities of the best sales professionals. And, you know, for purposes of this talk, I mean, we could call it the qualities of best sales professionals. We could call it the best qualities of collaboration, of interpersonal skills, of emotional intelligence. The first one at the very top you've got is something we see in all the great guests we've had on the podcast, is they're curious.
Yeah. Yeah. That is for good salespeople, you should not be selling. You should be trying to learn. And it is being curious. What's going on in your business? And it's doing research about your business before I've met the client, and planning and preparation for that client. And so being curious, again, it covers any job. I mean, you can be in IT, you still have to be curious and understand what the needs are of the various departments you work with. In marketing, curiosity is important. But in sales, it's especially so, because you're asking those questions to dig in and learn what your client or customer is going through. And being interested, showing true interest, and figuring out and seeing if you can determine a way to help them.
Yeah. And curiosity is one of the things I think that you have to hire for. That's a hard skill to develop in other people. I mean, it has to be from within.
Yeah.
This is a good one, and I hope we get some questions on this one. You say that they need to be confident and believe in their abilities. And I'm wondering, you know, I agree that, you know, salespeople need a certain amount of swagger, but what happens you know, if you've got a little too much of that? What do you need to have that balance with, do you think?
Oh, there's a real balance there, because we all know that salesperson who's a little too smooth, right?
Yeah.
And a little too slick. And that can be read so easily by our customers and clients. And it's there's a balance there. You know, when I say believe in your abilities and be confident, that's so much easier said than done. And I think the trick throughout our careers, it's a roller coaster, our confidence. We feel really good at times and we can feel really down at times. I have something in my wallet that I've had for more than almost 40 years. And it was when I first got into business and I was in sales, and it was tough. I didn't know what I was doing. And I'm thinking, my goodness sakes. And I had one of those days where I wrote down, think back and always remember May 15th on this date. Because it wasn't too good. And it was something, ironically, I keep in my wallet because I refer to it every once in a while. Certainly not every week, certainly not every year, but every once in a while, I refer from my 30s and my 40s. And now in the later stages of my career, when I left the corporate world 6 years ago, I said, I want to do something different. Well, about 4 months later, I said, what the heck did I just do? I was the senior vice president of sales of a big publishing company. Now I'm doing my own thing. And my confidence was a little at low. And I referred to that note. So we all go through those, you know, highs and lows. And it's very easy to say, you know, believe in yourself, Jan. You're going to be great. Mm-hmm. You're the best. But it's how you balance all of that. I think that's a good word to add with that phrase. Believe in your abilities and believe in that balance.
Yeah.
Of the highs and lows of our career and life.
Yeah. And I've seen, you know, the people I coach, even senior executives, you know, they have a lot of confidence, obviously. They got to a certain point, but there'll be some things where they take some digs from peers or their boss, and you see their confidence go down and their swagger.
Yeah.
And their effectiveness with other people. And I find that sometimes in coaching, I'm trying to help the people get their swagger back. And balance that with a, you know, a great deal of humility, of course.
Yeah, that swagger is, I think it's, you know, the trick of being a CEO sometimes is you're able to hide that. You know, you have that swagger. And when you're having those down times, you're able to bury it so people can't see it. Right. And but we all have it, whether you're entry level or whether you're a CEO. There are moments when you doubt your abilities or doubt the path you're on.
Yeah, I remember... you know, when I was selling out in the field, you know, I'd bang on 16 doors a day and hope to get into 8, you know, positions. And I remember at the end of the day, like a 4:30 call, you know, I'd be like, oh. And I would lower the visor of the mirror and I would look in the mirror and like Ray Schneider and all that jazz, I'd go, it's showtime. And I'd realize, you know, if I'm going to get, you know, what I give.
Right.
If I'm down and, you know, that I'm going to get that back. If I'm upbeat at 4:30 and excited to be there, I'm going to get that same energy back. But, you know, it wasn't easy.
No, it's not easy. But people can read if you're upbeat and smiling. Well, that goes back to, you know, emotional intelligence of how people perceive you and are aware of you. You know, if I'm talking here like this, Jan.
Yeah.
Talking to you like this, that there's, you can read me very well. But one of the things I'm fortunate with just my style and personality is I'm pretty upbeat most of the time and people can read that. I try to smile. I try to move my hands and let people see that I'm enthusiastic in being with them in a controlled way. I mean, obviously with some people, if I'm calling on a lawyer, I'm not going to be going and doing, you know, or cheerleading dances. You know what I mean? So it's knowing your audience. And being aware of what works in each environment, each situation.
Yeah. Well, you know, we said, you know, we advertised this as, hey, what's the one skill that's not going to be replaced by AI? And, and hopefully everybody's getting that is, you know, the ability to influence other people, you know, judgment. But, you know, we did get a question from Mohammed, and he's saying, you know, do you think AI is going to expand in the Middle East in the next 5 years? I don't know that... we can answer that. But I think, you know, one of the things that you talk about is making sure that we do embrace new technology, you know, as a means to be more effective when we are trying to influence other people.
Yes.
What's your thoughts there?
Well, I'm a big believer in all the new technology that has come along. You know, sometimes we get afraid of it. And I said, I'm so used to doing it this way. Now you're giving me something new to learn. And, you know, we are both dating ourselves here, but I mean, again, it's when I first got into business, my technology was a typewriter and a calculator on my desk. And, you know, and I used to run off airplanes to get into a telephone booth, you know, and if you don't know what a telephone booth is, you're going to have to Google it, but it's, you know, it's, we ran off planes so you could get to a telephone and call your customers. And now we have all of these various tools to do our business better. And whether it's a laptop, a tablet, phones, and AI tools where we can track and analyze of how we're calling and working with people, it's to help us be better. Now we can get overwhelmed with that. So it's the balance in our companies and organizations that you don't need to order everything. You need to order what works right for your companies. And these tools make us better. I talk all the time. The biggest advancement in my career has been the use of the customer resource management software, how we track our data, store our data, and most importantly, share our information with other parts of the organization. Going back to what you talked about of collaboration. So a lot of salespeople hate CRMs because it's, oh, I got to enter the data. Well, we all need to be trained on how to make it not an administrative task, but part of our sales process. And it also has to be used, and I think all of the technology used to be, give it to the sales organization, let them use it. It has to be used by everybody.
Right.
And from the CEO to the sales support person, everybody needs to use the CRM and own the CRM. So
yeah. Well, I launched CRMs in a big pharmaceutical company back in the early 90s. And I remember even back then, we launched that before we had email available.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, at first it felt like a management tool, you know, to get reports instead of, you know, to have a competitive advantage. But to me, you know, and again, this is a little bit of a plug for LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn has been the game changer.
Yeah.
Technology, because there's no reason you should go into a meeting and not know something about the other person at this point. I mean, there should not be anything that's a cold call or a cold meeting. You know, based on our ability to search and find out about companies and people, and again, not to be stalker.
No, but
be informed because we're curious.
Yeah, so it's that research phase of the sales process that I think I'm a good salesman, but I think I'm even better at doing my research and planning and preparation. I take that extra time. Yeah. Whether it's going on your website or looking about information about your background, Jana, before this our meeting today, and obviously I knew before our meeting today, but it's when we see customers, it's learning a little bit about them or what they're posting, what they're talking about, what they're commenting about, so that you can gives you a little bit of a competitive advantage, but also makes you a better person to be able to communicate. You've taken that time to learn about them.
Yeah, and we got a great question here from Catherine. Seems as though people under 38 prefer to only have technology and zero human interaction. What do you say?
I'm a big believer. You know, it's interesting. The past year to 2 years or 18 months for all of us of how we've learned to adapt with video and interaction and this type of communication. I love face-to-face contact. I mean, that's how I was trained and raised, so to speak, in business. But now I've learned that we have to have a balance with that. I wouldn't generalize and say that under a certain age, we like certain things or don't like certain things. A lot of it is the industry. A lot of it, the companies that we work for, the managers that we may have. I know people brand new to the business who are who love to go out and meet people. And I also have worked with people who've never been to see a client. A lot of the LinkedIn sales team, you know, they do a lot of it by phone, and they do a lot of it by Zoom and Teams calls. So it's again, each company handles it differently. I wouldn't generalize it by a certain age group, though.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think, you know, the one thing I would say, you know, to Catherine and others is, you know, if you feel like some communication is going sideways, you know, with a client or internally through email or text, stop. Just stop.
Yeah.
You know, pick up the phone, get in front of that person, have a discussion, because there's so much lost, you know, intonation and tone. And I mean, of course, you know, sarcasm doesn't come through but passive aggressiveness does.
Yeah.
And those kind of things. I'm not sure what this question is. Martin asks, what are the guests on Facebook and its future directions?
Mm-hmm. What do we think about Facebook in the future? Direct. Well, there's a hornet's nest of a discussion there of the whole Facebook issue. Mm-hmm. And I think where you can go with that is also when you're working with clients, you always have to be careful what topics we get into. I mean, I think we all have an opinion right now on Facebook. We all have an opinion right now on Twitter. And one of the things right now, I think, unfortunately, whether it's no matter where we're based, whether we're in the Middle East, Asia, Europe, or the Americas, is we're split 50-50 on every issue.
Yeah.
Right. And it seems obvious to us. One person may be totally opposite to the other. So my thoughts on Facebook may be totally different than yours, Jan. And so you always have to be careful as we talk about, you know, what's going to be happening, the future direction of any of these businesses, any of these social media outlets. And
Well, I think the thing that we could agree on is, you know, I mean, all this opens up lots of channels and, you know, it has the opportunity to do a great deal of good. And a lot of these, you know, it can be misused.
Yes.
I think we could all agree on that. You know, what we're focused on is, you know, when it comes to sales and selling, again, we're not just talking about selling externally to clients. We're talking about, you know, getting our ideas across or trying to get the team, you know, to focus in a certain area. Or maybe it's, you know, hey, I want to have more boundaries at work so that, you know, I have better work-life balance. Or maybe I'm advocating for a 4-day work week with my company. And I really, you know, I want to build an alliance to get that done. I mean, so there's a lot of different things there. But Martin, we definitely appreciate the question. Let me go to another one here. Let's see. Yeah, I think we can agree with that, Dan.
Yeah, that's a preparation. That's been my mantra that I learned from my very first boss. I was very, very lucky. I had a great first manager, 22 years old. He was a mentor coach. In fact, I just posted about him. LinkedIn had, it was National Mentorship Day, and I had a picture of him. He's in his late 80s now, and I still am in touch with him, and I see him, you know, once a year, try to stay in touch. And his whole focus was planning and preparation. Whether you're in sports, whether you're cooking, whether you're in sales, no matter what, that's that planning and preparation that gets you ready to be and energized to make a call, or energized to do that cooking you may want to do, or whatever your job may be. And you know, so posed that question. I agree 100%.
Yeah, and Martin was talking about, you know, the metaverse, which is Facebook's new thing with I think with augmented reality and virtual reality. And I don't think I know enough about it to speak to it. But I think having augmented reality as far as walking around, navigating a city might be interesting. But other than that, I don't know that I could comment.
Well, what the point is, though, Martin, is also that the technology, you go back 5 years ago, 5 years, the business, we were talking about different things. Were we even talking about Zoom? I mean, it's like, and now we're talking about what was going to be happening in the future with the artificial intelligence and how we're going to be working with customers. The message there is we have to be open to the new technology and the new devices and new tools that are available to us. Not all of them are going to be a perfect match, and not all of them are going to be effective, but we need to be open and learn and devise the ways that they can help us work with our customers better.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the other thing, and I want to bounce this off you, Dean, you know, again, we said, hey, what's the one thing that's not going to be replaced by AI? And we're saying, well, sales. But more specifically, I think it's influence and judgment. Right. And because one thing we know is, you know, AI might be very rational, but we know that we are not rational creatures who are sometimes emotional. We are emotional creatures who are sometimes rational. So, you know, having a human there to exercise judgment, you know, to properly influence, you know, again, to align two different agendas. I don't see AI replacing that anytime soon.
Well, as I've worked with buyers through the years, I'm very fortunate to being a good reader of people. And when you're able to read a customer, you know, the AI can't do that. But you know, if a customer, your buyer that you've worked with for a while is under stress, you know, we say, that's a two-way street. The buyer is under a lot of pressure too right now, that as long with the salespeople, everybody's being judged by upper management. and evaluated. And the way a buyer makes a decision is just as critical as the way a salesman sells a product or service. Mm-hmm. And so it's being aware of the stress that they're under, the situations they may be in, going back to planning and preparation, understanding if their company is doing well or not right now. Imagine if you're making a call on people from GE today. They just found out their company's being split apart. So, you know, it's being aware and understanding. So that impact of what's going on at those companies is enormous. And it's from the small retailer to the very large multi-billion dollar organization. It's one-on-one. And that doesn't happen through AI. That happens through eye contact and being aware and listening and caring for that other individual.
Well, the other thing is, you know, I heard, I forget his first name, Harari, the guy that wrote Sapiens, in an interview recently, and he was talking about, you know, that, you know, with AI, you've got to start having all the ethical, and philosophical discussions now, because you have to code those things in. So, you know, one of the rules that you have is, you know, as a salesperson, you've got to be ethical and honest. So, you know, what's your guidance when you're doing workshops, you're teaching, you're coaching, you know, with regard to, you know, how you can make sure that you're being ethical and honest?
It's unfortunate we have to always talk about it, but that's part of human issues, right? It's ethics and honesty, but you have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror. And if you can't look at yourself in the mirror that you've treated somebody properly with ethics, with honesty and integrity, that's square one. Once you lose that, it never comes back. I often refer to, you know, a politician or business people, when something goes awry, that they'll say, you know, oh, I didn't do it, you know, it didn't happen this way, or it's being misread. And then, you know, then 2 weeks later they say, well, you know, it could have happened this way, and we tried to do it this way. And then a month later they're in front of a camera crying, and they're saying, I'm so sorry. The best way in business and the best way in life is just to be honest, to be truthful, but to be ethical. Am I perfect? Are you perfect? No way. And we all have those moments where we may have bent the rules a little bit, but there's a line there that cannot be crossed when you are misleading somebody or manipulating somebody, or heaven help you if you've lied to somebody. You can never get that credibility back.
Yeah. The military has a phrase for knowing what to do, and they call it the hard right versus the easy wrong.
Yeah.
That, you know, because a lot of times the right thing to do is hard. So, you know, I've got another question coming in from Ahmad. What should I do? And I think he means, what should I do and not do during an online sales meeting? Any tips, like when you're this way, I'm guessing, versus face to face is what he's talking about.
Well, there's you still need to be yourself, whether you're seeing somebody in person and seeing somebody in a situation like this. It takes practice. You have to work. It goes back to planning and preparation. I got to tell you, when last March of 2020, I think we were all learning how to do this better.
Right.
It's, you know, online presentations. There's a great course on LinkedIn Learning by Jessica Chen on video conferencing and how we look and how we approach and working with our customers. So it goes back to, we always need to be learning and learning new techniques. I was pretty bad last March of 2020, my first calls, and then I'm clicking away and I don't know what I'm doing, or I'm looking over here. Right. We were all trying to figure it out. So it takes practice. When you're in somebody's office, you know, what you see here is what you get. My hands are going, I'm smiling, I'm talking. But on a video conference, I have to try to be more reserved and look at the camera like this and work at it. So that's a great question. It takes practice, and it takes doing this work on your own of doing role. We all hate role playing because it's that awkward feeling, but do that to practice those things, and finding a friend or working with your manager to try those two different settings.
Yeah. My biggest thing I've seen is, I mean, well, one, you want to frame yourself right, but the lighting is so important, because if the lighting's bad, you are not fully communicating.
I mean,
you know, people can't see your expressions. They can't see.
Right.
And even your posture, you know, people are sitting back, you know, the don't look fingers. You know, one of the things I do, you might be able to tell, is I'm
standing.
You know, and standing up, I can be a lot more animated.
Yes.
And if I'm sitting, and I am, I'm a lot more energized standing.
Yes. Now, I've noticed that as I've watched you on presentations, or we've had meetings with LinkedIn, and I always notice that you stand. And it's ironically, I live in a small house. I'm in my basement right now. So it's a basement office because of COVID. I had to go here. I also have a direct internet connection. You talk about getting your connections and connectivity better. So I'm direct on the internet here versus, you know, doing wireless, you know, so lesson learned, you know, when you're, we've all been there on that call where all of a sudden you're like,
Oh, I've had, especially on StreamYard, I've had some issues for Atlantis. Well, these are, you know, this goes back to, you know, one of the things that I learned in sales early on was, you know, the controllables. You know, you can control, you know, your setting and what, I mean, just as you can control the clothes you choose.
Right.
You have two others that are controllables that you say, honor your commitments and follow up.
Right.
So
how hard is that? But we, how often have you, let's just talk about when we've ordered something from a customer or we bought something from a store and it's not what you thought you were getting. Or it's some came in differently. Do you have a negative or positive reaction? You have a negative reaction. If I tell you like today, Jan, I'm going to be coming and talking with you 10 minutes before the hour, before we started this broadcast, I'm here early. I was there. And it's honoring the commitment. It's not saying at 9 o'clock this morning, Jan, I can't make it today.
Yeah. You know,
it's honoring commitments, whether it's in business or life or our personal life. And and follow up is if I say I'm going to do something, you do it. And it's, but aligned with that is also remembering you can't say yes to everything. It's a message I talk about. It's very easy to say, don't do everything, but we're often falling into the trap of saying yes to everything. Oh, I'll do that. I'll do that. So the lesson learned is you have to learn how to say no, so that you are always there to follow up and honor your commitments.
Well, you talk about, prioritizing and keeping things focused as a general rule. And I mean, a lot of that is saying no to things.
Yeah, it's a process of learning throughout our careers. I think early on, we want to say yes to everything so we don't miss out on anything. And we overcommit because we figure we're going to fear of missing out and or fear of not being in that meeting or meeting that boss or meeting that customer. And as you go through life, you learn that you can't do everything. And for me, especially, I'm one of those people who needs to really focus. I mean, I'm old school. I still have my files and, you know, paper folders and my desk is really organized and it's all set in place so that I can really give my true focus to what I want to talk about today. So in fact, right in front of me are some of my notes. You know, there's information about you that I have here. So that's how I work. But we're all different. You have to find what's comfortable for you.
Yeah. Well, let me just switch gears a little bit on a really important skill that you talk about, and that's networking. Mm. And again, I could just sense everybody's hair on the back of their neck. They're like, oh, networking. But it is so important internally and externally. What's your counsel?
And it's funny why you said that. That's actually one of my lines. I said, you say the word networking, immediately everybody goes like this. No, please.
Yeah.
And we have visions of those agendas that when we go to a meeting that says networking break. Or we have a little name tag that says, hi, I'm Jan, I'm Dean. And you have to go try to meet 50 people. And, you know, there are sessions like that. There are networking groups and you get together and you try to meet a few people. For me, it's just reaching out and it's just trying to stay connected with each other. I think you and I are a perfect example. We were in a LinkedIn meeting. You happened to be in a breakout room with me. We both said hello and let's follow up and chat someday. We're two different worlds, two different, and here we are. And how hard was that? It was to say, hi, I like what you have to talk about and I like what you're doing. And you said the same to me. So networking is what I think are basics of communication. And don't think it of as a chore. And don't think of it as the necessity to meet 50 people or have 10,000 connections on LinkedIn. What you're looking for are a few here and a few there and communicating and sharing ideas with other people.
Well, and to me, it ties into being curious.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I mean, you know, like, where are you calling in from? You're in New Jersey. I'm in Oregon. I mean, isn't that interesting? I mean, you know, again, you and I have been in the work world a long time. You know, 30 years ago, what we're doing, the work we do, would have been impossible.
Right.
I mean, almost impossible to do all this. So we're talking about technology you know, the good and the evil of it. I mean, all this wouldn't even be possible.
It's so true. It's so true. And it's like, you know, people always say to me, Dean, you're such a great networker. And I don't know what I do. I just say hello to people. And I am curious and I ask what they're doing. And I have loved the fact, my experience, for example, with LinkedIn and LinkedIn Learning are meeting other instructors and meeting somebody like you and learning about your background, your work in the military and how you took that and built a whole career off of that. And then I think we met, so to speak, indirectly because I watched your course Grit. Wow, what a great course. And, you know, in that course, you had the producers and directors, and some of them I had worked with my courses. And I reached out to them. And I said, boy, what a great course you created with Jan Rutherford. And, you know, so it's that was all part of that networking. And then lo and behold, we met. I wrote you and I said, what a great course.
Well, and what I find interesting is, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, are experts on sales and sales training, but you know, a lot of them are real like technique-y, which is a turnoff to me. I mean, I like the fact that you're, you know, a lot of this was about, you know, just, you know, kind of like Dale Carnegie, how to friends and influence people, how to be authentic, you know, how to be curious. We got one up here. Somebody, Martin asked about, you know, networking via social events.
Well, that's, I think that's where people get afraid sometimes because you say, I got to go to an event where there are 50 people in a room and you're all sitting or talking and moving around. And it's intimidating at times. You walk into a room and some people are already talking and you're alone. And I think you have to approach those things as, I just want to meet one person and go to that one person, say hello. And that goes back then to what do you say? Hi, I'm Dean Carroll. I'm a career development coach, a sales trainer, the author of 14 courses on LinkedIn Learning. And that's your opener. I mean, this is what I do. So you have to have that 10-second line of who you are. But don't look at it as trying to meet 50 people at those social events. If you meet five, that's great. It's having an objective when you go there. You're not going to try to meet 50 people. You're not looking for 50 cards. Meet two or three. And, you know, that's and approach it with realistic expectations.
Well, you know, the Carnegie book, which we've mentioned, you know, can be summed up in four words, be interested versus interesting. Mm-hmm. And I see this all the time, often with veterans that are getting out, you know, I'll meet them and they'll go, well, let me give you my background.
Right.
Well, I mean, all I need to know is you served. That's all I need. And I appreciate your service, your sacrifice, part of your family. But I would be much more impressed if somebody said, hey, you know, tell me about what you do. Tell me about what you've learned. Tell me about what you wish you'd known about the transition.
Right.
I mean, because what everybody wants to talk about themselves. But if you go right into, let me give you my background, let me tell you what I'm looking for, it's really tough. But if you're really curious, then at some point, you're like, well, I wonder where all these questions are coming from. Hey, you know, here's somebody you need to meet. Somebody that's lined up with you. And again, I don't think that's any different networking than when you're selling, when you're trying to build better relationships with peers and bosses and even what we call subordinates, people that are direct reports.
Well, I take it back even further. It comes down to just human skills of just saying hello. You know, some people and smile, say hello and greet people. And I don't think that's rocket science, but for some people, it does take a little bit more. That's been my thing I'm not doing cheerleading and waving my hands all the time to greet everybody. But when I see somebody, I say hello and I do show interest and I don't connect with everybody. It's the people I think that I would work well with, or I may be able to help along the way. So
what's your counsel here for Ahmed? Finding the right people is not easy. Nobody has time for every contact. How do I find the right people and not waste my time with others?
It's fine tuning, and it's, you know, everybody you meet is not going to be an angel. So it's like it's being selective, and it's okay to be selective. If somebody's not connecting, you don't feel they're the right person to meet or work with, move on. You know, just say, hey, it was great to meet you. Nice. Have a great day. And it's also, and then it changes through the years. Some of the people I knew 15, 20 years ago, I'm still connected with, and I still maintain relationships with others. boy, I haven't seen in 10, 15 years. It is an evolving situation. And I don't know thousands of people. My network is really small. I have a lot of connections. But the people I work with is really smaller than you think. So that's a great question. It's not, I'm trying to meet and have all of these connections and they're all not going to work. But if something does look like it could be fruitful, we'll try to cultivate it.
Well, I think, you know, I think part of it too is having the mentality of being a giver versus a taker.
Yes.
You know, if you're just looking for people that can help you, I think you're going to come across as pretty selfish.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, when you say, well, what do I have to give to everybody? You know what? We can give this.
Mm,
we'll be totally focused on you for the few moments I'm with you.
Right.
Because, I mean, what do we want more than anything is we want somebody to hear us, to acknowledge us, to know we're there. And again, one of the greatest things that can happen is when somebody gets us.
Yeah.
Oh, you get me.
You did something there that is so important. You just looked me right in the eye, right? And you focused on right in the eye like this and said, let me learn about you.
Yeah.
Tell me about you or what you're working on and show that interest goes back. And that's not a Harvard MBA class. That's the basics of interpersonal communication.
You know, I heard that Dwight Eisenhower supposedly had it. You know, I've heard people describe, again, whether you're, politics aside, right. I've heard Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
You know, I've met Colin Powell and other people have said Colin Powell had it. And I was talking to somebody the other day, you know, an unknown person, and they said, you know, hey, we love, you know, the boss. I'm like, why do you love the boss? And they're like, you know what? He comes to visit us. He's super busy. Oh my gosh. I can't imagine all this stuff. I've never seen him open his laptop. When he's with us, he's with us.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you think, how hard is that?
Right.
If you want people to bust their butt for you and work for you and to be all there, all you have to do is give them your time.
100% attention. The CEO who's in the back of the room and got their phone doing this while the presentation. Oh, my goodness sakes. That's, wow. You want to know how to disrupt an organization? And then before you go on, though, you mentioned Colin Powell and it's funny. I just took out his book. And unfortunately, this book, again, forget your politics.
Yeah.
This is, it worked for me. The first 200 pages of this book are outstanding. I used to give out a book to the people I worked with a couple times a year. And I gave this book out saying, again, we're not talking politics. We're talking his leadership techniques. The first 200 pages of this book are outstanding of leadership tips. So when he passed, I took it out again and I reread it. And I said, what great lessons he had in here. Yeah. And it's just a marvelous, marvelous leader.
Yeah.
That cared for all levels, cared for the entry level private to all the way up to the senior brass. You know, Schwarzkopf was like that too, right? You know, from the entry level private to the senior level, within the military. And it's that ability, same within a company, the CEO who can relate to the brand new support person to somebody who's a senior vice president.
Yeah. Real quick, admin thing. Let me just cover this with Muhammad. We don't have any sort of certificate for this, what we call office hours, but I know one of my courses has a certificate, Managing in Difficult Times. Dean, I'm sure a bunch of your courses probably have certificates associated with them. Anyone that you want to mention in particular?
Well, I think anybody who's like a little nervous about sales and wants to learn about sales, my entry-level course is Prepare Yourself for a Career in Sales. And I don't talk about sales. I talk about the skills, basically, that we're talking about today. It's working with people, listening, being curious. So that's available. It's actually available free right now on LinkedIn Learning.
Yeah, good. Good. Free. You know, it's interesting. We interviewed on the leadership podcast recently, a guy named Michael Dowling. He's the CEO of Northwell Health in New York. 75,000 people report to him. Mm. He's an Irish immigrant who grew up in a cottage that had a mud floor, no plumbing, no electricity. Mm. And here he is, the CEO, a counselor to governors, the grand marshal in the St. Patrick's Day parade. Literally the American dream. And when we interviewed him, here's the compliment coming, Dean. When we interviewed him, there was nothing fancy about what he said.
Mm.
It was all just good old common sense Irish, you know, stories. There was nothing fancy about what he said that it takes to effectively lead. And that's, you know, what I'm hearing from you is there's nothing fancy about what you're saying. There's no special technique. This is a lot about, you know, I mean, being a decent human being.
I talk all the time about the fact I was a B student. You know, we're all intimidated by these A students of the Harvard MBA, the Stanford MBA. I was a B student. And I kiddingly say I got to be a B student because I got an A in bowling my senior year, which got me to a 3.0. And it's like, but so how do you become successful, or how do you do well, or how do you reach the level of your potential? And I think it's by mastering those basic skills that we've talked about today. And it's and you work hard and you have basic ethics. And, you know, we get into talk about sales, you get intimidated. You hear these things about, you know, the Miller Hyman method, the Challenger sale, and this type of all these advanced methodologies. And I talk about, you know, show up on time and smile and listen, take good notes, follow up, be good to people.
Yeah. And you know, the last tip you've got, and we'll kind of close out our conversation, is, and this is the hardest part in sales, in anything, is knowing when to ask for the business and close the sale.
Right.
And again, this isn't just about external selling. This is about influencing people.
Yeah.
So what's your tip there?
Well, the first thing that people ask me all the time is, how do you close sales? And I always say, what's more important are all the other steps before that in the sales process. And if you've done a good job with discovery and asking questions and follow up and working with the buyer and realizing you're going to get objections and they're going to be no's along the way, that the close should come easily. It's looking for those signals of, what are we missing? I think we've checked off all the boxes. How do we move forward? How do I help you move forward? What else is there? So there are some, you know, statements and questions that you can ask that close that business. But we're so often we're fearful of rejection, which of course we are. We don't want to hear no. I don't want to hear no. You don't want to hear no. But that happens. Or people, some people just don't want to buy. They're like going in the whirlpool. Yeah. And you'll have to learn when to leave the whirlpool, and you come back 4 months later, six months later. Yeah. But there are cues that you hear and say, let's do it. How are we going to work together on this? How can I help you move forward on this? And that's what I think closing sales is. But again, we're so conditioned to seeing the TV or the movie where somebody's manipulating the close. And I'm more of a person who says, how do we work together to move forward rather than close? Close sounds good. So it's how do we do it together?
Yeah. Well, I'd rather get a no than a maybe.
Yeah.
You move on, I move on. The co-host I work with, Jim Vassilopoulos, you know, he always says the way he closes is, hey, Dean, I like you. I think you like me.
Yeah.
You know, let's work together.
Yeah.
And it sounds corny, but I mean, ultimately, you know, companies don't buy from companies. People buy from people. It is a relationship. And is there a connection? Is there perceived trust in that the future is going to be better than the present?
That's the big phrase now is, you know, the buyer first philosophy moving forward post COVID is how we have this buyer first philosophy. It comes back to trust, becoming a trusted advisor. If you're perceived as being manipulative or not all there or not being fully truthful or you're being too salesy, that trust fades quickly. Yeah. But I don't want you to go. I wanted to point out one more thing that you talked about that you have on your site, that you talk about your philosophy, which links very closely with my beliefs. So Sparta's discipline, Socrates self-awareness, Aristotle's courage. All of these are sales issues. Emerson's self-reliance and Thoreau's reflective seclusion. That's sales. All of those five pieces of your philosophy is what sales, it relates to a lot of different things, but that's sales. So I took good notes.
Oh, good. Well, I appreciate that, Dean. That's very kind of you. As we close out, what would you like to leave, you know, the listeners with, you know, whether it be a final thought or even a challenge, something to think about. And again, going back to what this topic is all about, you know, the one skill that will not be replaced by artificial intelligence anytime soon.
Well, I think the important lesson for everybody is it's always be learning. Whether you're 22, 42, 62, it sounds like a catchphrase. It can't be a catchphrase. I used the example when I was 60 years old, I went back to NYU and I took courses and coaching and training, and I was with people half my age and twice as smart as me. It re-energized me, motivated me. It was terrific. So throughout your career, it's learning new skills, enhancing your skills, and it's okay to raise your hand and ask for help. There's nothing to be ashamed about, especially what we've learned over the past 18 months, where it's been tough for a lot of people to navigate what's going on. Ask for help, reach out to others. And if you're in a difficult situation, if you're in a company that's not listening, I'm not saying you leave tomorrow, but you need to develop a path for finding a more productive future. And that's a philosophy that's different than you and I followed, you know, when we first got into business or when you left the military, Jan, it was, you know, you used to say, stick it out, work with the company, find a solution. I'm of the school now of keep your eyes open, keep the paths in a positive way, because that's how you're going to enjoy life and enjoy work. Enjoy what you're doing and have fun with what you're doing. And also realizing not every day is going to be a ray of sunshine. And that's life. It's part of life. There are going to be tough days, but find ways to find those productive and happier days ahead.
Yeah, well said. And Dean, where can folks learn more about you and your courses and your work?
I post pretty much two or three times a week on LinkedIn. Please follow me there. Connect with me there. I talk about sales-related issues, but business-related issues. I just had a fun trip to the UK. You'll see some pictures of me working with some LinkedIn Learning instructors there last week. So it's I talk about real things, and so please follow me and reach out. Love to connect,
Dean. It was a real an honor and a pleasure being with you, and you know, thanks for all you do to help all of us.
Well, thank you. I'm talking about honor to speak with you. Your service to our country, your work, and then your personality and style makes everybody feel good. You're a very upbeat and positive person, Jan.
Thanks, grateful. Dean. Thank you. We'll see you later, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.